Tony Acero, Harry Rogers, and Rick Bailey.
It is August 7th, I think. Yeah, August 7th. I'm losing track of my day, Tony, but you're going too fast.
Yeah, well.
It happens. Anywho, it is August 7th, 2017. My name is Harry Broadhurst. This is the Raw Reaction here on Yes Wrestling Radio in association with YesWrestling.com, the voice of the fans. My co-host, as per usual, the 411 Mania Raw reporter, Tony Acero.
That's me.
And let's talk about the big news to come out of wrestling this weekend. AJ
okay.
Mendez?
AJ Acero, what?
Tony, what did you do?
I didn't do anything. I just wrote some letters. Staged some photos.
I'm calling shenanigans. You broke up a marriage, Tony.
I didn't do anything that he wouldn't have done anyway.
All right, that's probably fair. So, did you enjoy your vacation last week from the reaction?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I went to the movies. I don't remember. All my days kind of bleed together.
Yeah, you did. You saw Dunkirk with Vanessa.
Oh, yeah.
There was unfortunately no reaction last week because the guy who usually hosts the show, yours truly, was actually at Raw in Pittsburgh and unfortunately was not. I did not get home until 2 a.m. in the morning. At that point, we all kind of realized that, yeah, even thinking about doing a reaction that late at night was kind of a lost cause. So we decided not to and just saved it for today.
Yes.
And
so since we don't have Robert,
well,
we're probably just going to go down the show.
Well, actually, I kind of feel like we should start with the main event here, and then we can kind of take it from the top.
That's fine.
I feel like that main event deserves being the first thing we talk about.
Yes.
I saw the rating you gave it. Why don't you go ahead and describe what went down? Last man standing, Roman Reigns and Braun Strowman.
I mean, what you do is, I mean, you. It's well known that my dislike for Roman Reigns is apparent. And it's also well known that our love for Braun Strowman over the past year or so is also very apparent. So it may be a bit of a surprise to see that I gave this quite a high rating for a match. But realistically speaking, it was so much fun to watch. It was exactly what you wanted and then some. I mean, yeah, we can say how tired we are of hearing about you know, seeing Reigns and Braun go at it over and over again. But, I mean, if you continue to do it this way, then it's pretty awesome. And then you throw Joe in at the very end, and that was expected. I think it was predicted. I think anyone who didn't see that coming was a little dumb. And yet, it was still pretty damn awesome.
Yeah, Yes Wrestling's Raw recapper, Stephen Mitchell, had a comment along the lines of it should have been a double countout for the finish tonight. I completely disagree with that, and the fact that Roman won the triple threat last week, this gives Strowman an opportunity to look strong and pick up the victory here. Plus, there's the fact that Strowman has kind of owned most of the singles encounters that he and Roman have had.
Yeah, it did not need to be a double countout at all. That would have pissed a lot of people off, and it would have just kind of left it unfinished. And while I'll agree that, you know, if these guys are going to go, you know, fatal four-way pretty soon, then there's really not a lot of reason to have them go one-on-one. It kind of works differently here, whereas this is one of those matches where everyone's going to say, like, oh, we don't need to see this. This isn't something that we need to see. They need to keep it. And then the match happens, and everybody just shuts up. So I'm pretty happy. I'm happy with it. I'm happy with the result. I'm happy that Joe, yet again, looks stronger than Roman Reigns. I'm happy that Braun continues to be Braun. I'm happy that Reigns didn't win. He doesn't need it. So, yeah, I think that this was done 100% correct, and there was absolutely no need for a double countout.
I got I got four simple words for you here, Tony, though. That chair spot, though.
Yes, that was beautiful. It was similar to JBL tossing a trash can to Hornswoggle.
Or, you remember the old Sabu chair toss, except this was completely clean?
Yeah, it was just spot on.
Like, I don't think Strowman could have hit him better with that if he'd have walked up and actually hit him with the damn thing.
Yeah.
He fucking bullseyed him with a rolling chair. It was hilarious. And visually impressive as well.
Yeah.
I mean, granted, it's a padded chair, but at the same time, it's a padded chair being thrown at you by a 375-pound pissed-off, muscular, bearded dude.
Yeah, no, it didn't hurt Reigns at all, but it just looked badass. I mean, it looked far more convincing than some of the other spots they've done in the past few months.
So I want to give credit where credit is due. I fought for the chair spot. And yeah, I actually really enjoyed the match. I questioned the decision to give away this match on television because I felt like this could have been a good pay-per-view blow-off to their feud. But at the same time, I have no complaints
mm-hmm.
about the match itself. I thought the match itself was very well done. All right, so from one set of ass-kickers in the SummerSlam 4-way match to another ass-kicker in that SummerSlam 4-way match. As Miz TV opens Raw this week, we have Miz out in the ring accompanied by Curtis Axel and Bo Dallas. And Miz complains that he's sick and tired of getting his ass, not in those exact words, handed to him on his own show. So he calls out Jason Jordan and says he's going to handle business right now. Instead of getting Jason Jordan, Kurt Angle's music hits. Tony, why don't you take it from here?
Well, first I want to say that the best thing about and the boy is spot on. He knows who he is. He knows what's going on in his segments, and he takes full control. You know, there's a part of me that wants to complain about the IC champion getting his ass handed to him. But then there's a part of me that's like, but it's Brock Lesnar. You know, and I don't know if that's wrong. I don't know if I'm wrong in feeling that way, but, like, I didn't feel bad for a long time. I even went so far as to say, like, well, doesn't Curtis Axel have a match later? Like, that kind of makes him look like a little bitch. But I refrained. I kept from that because I thought to myself, it's Curtis Axel. He is a little bitch. So I didn't have many negative thoughts about the segment or what went down. Even the thoughts about Miz were kind of fleeting, so... I think if I'm going to talk about this segment, the thing I want to talk about the most is basically the Miz just being the Miz. What his stealing and hijacking of Heyman's little intro was great. And again, Heyman sells things just like anyone else, just like everyone else should, but doesn't. He just tosses the mic when Miz says that his hand goes up, and then Heyman stays quiet. I just thought it was a nice little back and forth for those two guys. And I would love to see The Miz interact yet again with Heyman. I think that he was one of the few people that shut Heyman up with the truth. You know, it was one of those promos that, you know, you can take your ball and go home. I'm still going to be here.
Yeah, with all due respect to Heyman here, I think Miz completely outshined him on the microphone in this segment. And you were talking about the fact that you didn't appreciate the Intercontinental Champion being somewhat sacrificed to the Universal Champion here. But I think at the same time, with a guy like Miz, who constantly runs his mouth and is constantly getting his ass handed to him because of it, I think in the context of this entire segment here, it made sense.
Yeah, and I like how he cut the entire promo behind his two dudes. Like, he's the Miz, man. He's going to get away with whatever he can.
I was more surprised the Miz didn't roll out of the ring once Axel and Dallas ate the double clothesline.
Yeah, I consider that a possibility. Like, that probably would have went over better, and it wouldn't have made Miz look so bad. But if there's anyone that could recover from that, it's the Miz.
Yeah, not to mention, Miz just has to cut an angry promo in Boston next week about how he got attacked on his own show again and how he's getting sick and tired of management taking him for granted around here. Again, he can go back and even blame that on Kurt Angle and his favoritism towards one Jason Jordan as well.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah, he can spin
it anyway. About my son and myself last. Miz could spin it. Oh, you had things to say about my son and me last week on Miz TV? Well, this week you get Brock Lesnar. Have fun, jackass.
Yeah.
All right. That does lead to a Jason Jordan match a little bit later on, but we'll talk about that once we get to it. Our first contest is actually a rematch of the match that happened in Pittsburgh the week before, of Seth Rollins versus Sheamus. This time, Sheamus gets the win after a distraction by Cesaro, and then the tag team champions proceed to lay out Rollins yet again, this time with no assist from Dean Ambrose. Do you like the fact that Ambrose did not get involved this time after saying as much last week?
Yeah, I did. I enjoyed it. You know, it's a twist on a trope that happens way too often. And I like the fact that what they're doing is they're doing things that are against the grain. You know, how often do we see a tag team break up and then team back together again, but with no conversation or argument about how they can't trust each other? Like, this is a little bit different, and it's refreshing. Dean not going out there is a part of that. You expected it. You're watching the match, and you're like, okay, well, he's going to come out, and there you go. It's going to be another begrudging tag team. And then we get what we get, and I liked it. I enjoyed the fact that he didn't go out.
Backstage segment leads to Ambrose and Rollins having their confrontation. We're going to jump ahead a little bit later on in the show where Ambrose takes on Cesaro in one hell of a match, in my opinion.
Yeah, good stuff.
Very strong effort by both of these guys.
Yeah, and Ambrose can actually wrestle.
Well, Ambrose being able to wrestle has never been the question. Ambrose being motivated has always been the problem.
Yeah, well, that and the way that the match is booked. I mean, how often do we get a match that is the... You know, I've talked about this before, where everyone thinks John Cena has the five moves of doom, when in reality, everyone does. His are just more obvious. But Ambrose does, too, and it begins and ends with that horrible rebound clothesline, which was in existence tonight, but it wasn't the only thing. We had a mat-based beginning. We had a lot of freshness. We had Cesaro being Cesaro. And really, I mean, that man can't have a bad match. So...
I would imagine Vanessa approved.
Oh yeah, she was super excited.
Except for the whole Cesaro taking the fall in this match thing. I'm guessing she was not a big fan of that.
Just said no repeatedly. I'm not. I didn't. I had to leave her alone. I wasn't sure what to do.
As long as she wasn't doing like the Daniel Bryan no arms while she was saying it, I think he should be okay. But post-match, the bar, not the one where Tony works, but the standard of excellence in the tag team division, proceeds to lay out Dean Ambrose. This time, Seth Rollins makes the save, repaying the favor for Ambrose, attempting to make the save last week. Ambrose is actually appreciative of said save and puts his fist out in the old Shield formation. Rollins looks at him. It's kind of this goofy, shit-eating grin on his face, and then proceeds to shake his head and roll out of the ring. They are slow-burning the shit out of this one, Tony.
Yeah, the only issue that I have is that that doesn't coincide with the entirety of his character up to this point. So it kind of comes off as, like, untrue, and comes off as if they're stalling just to get to SummerSlam, which is dumb. You don't change a character's motivation through just to, you know, try to create a more intriguing storyline. That's not how it works. It doesn't come off well. And it makes Seth look untruthful. This entire time, he's trying to prove a point that he's changed, that he's different. And then just because of this moment, he suddenly changes his mind. If he changed his mind, he wouldn't have gone out there. But he goes out there, he proves a point, and then he doesn't fist bump. It's just, I don't know. I thought it was kind of dumb.
Using Larry's review for the show here, and you are pretty much in exact line with his thoughts here, it felt odd that Rollins walked away. He had been trying to prove himself and seemingly got exactly what he wanted in Ambrose's approval, but now he decides to walk away. Not sure about it, but after taking the ass beating he did earlier, he should be kissing Ambrose's ass for the help that he got.
You know, Larry and I don't always agree, but apparently this time we did.
But when you do agree, you strongly agree.
True.
And then he matches you up against Len Archibald on Fact or Fiction unfairly.
It's all right. Just hold on to that name and wait a little bit.
I've heard the rumblings. I kind of have an idea of what's going on. I won't spoil it for our listeners. All right, let's go ahead and talk about Jason Jordan and Jean-Pierre Jobber Goulet. Okay, first of all, this has to be a rib on Pierre Carl Ouellet. Second of all, crowd kind of rebelling a little bit against Jason Jordan here. I mean, granted, Toronto, it's bizarro world. It always has been. They fans up there kind of do what they want to. Do you think this is a sign of things to come, or do you think this is kind of a one-off?
It's hard to tell because, like I said in the review or in the recap, if they want Jason Jordan to get booed, then they're doing the right thing. You don't have him face someone that is from the town that you're in and then beat him, you know? And we are a part of a generation of wrestling fans that will definitely get behind the underdog because they're tired of getting people crammed down their throats. There's literally a chant tonight that said, "Let's go jobber." If that isn't the epitome of what the IWC is right now, then I don't know what is. And that's not an insult. That's not a knock. I mean, we're tired of the same old thing. So to see someone literally get picked out of nowhere to wrestle on the main stage, we're excited as shit. Like, oh my God, fuck yeah. I don't know if it was a one-off, but I think that we're getting a little bit of a testing of the ground before we ultimately see Jason Jordan go full heel.
Do you think Kurt Angle turns heel as well, or do you think this becomes an impressed Kurt Angle kind of situation with it, with Jordan doing whatever it takes in order to try to win over his father?
I think neither. I think that Angle will be the innocent bystander of Jason Jordan's eventual heel turn. Like, you know, he's going to try his best to be the good role model father, but Jason's just going to snap.
Leading to Angle bringing in somebody to face Jordan?
No, I don't know what's going to happen. I don't think that far. You know, I don't like fantasy booking. But just judging by the little movements that Jason Jordan makes in the ring, I think he's gearing up for a possible turn. Not even a turn, just a gradual growth into, you know, heel.
So basically Rocky Maivia into The Rock.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't give him that much credit, but...
Well, I mean, in terms of the fact of kind of the fans forcing their hand here, though.
Yeah, yeah, but I think that they're smart enough to realize what's happening.
All right, I don't know if necessarily know that they want Jordan booed. I think that Toronto being what Toronto is, and our next segment is kind of proof of Toronto being what Toronto is with Bailey being booed.
Yeah, that was unfortunate. Vanessa actually asked, like, why are they booing her? And it was kind of hard to explain. I mean, I could say, you know, I could let her know, like, this is a world in which up is down and right is left. But I think there's more to that. I think there's more to it than that. I think that Toronto is a perfect example of the fan base. I don't think that they're wrong or that they feel differently than everybody else. I think that they're just more vocal into what they believe in. And what I believe is that people are tired of Bailey cutting the same promo with a different injury. It's not her fault. It's the way she's been booked and the lack of, like, continuous care. You can't just go up and down with one person, and that's what they did with Bailey. You couple that with an injury where you're basically saying, like, all right, well, we got behind you again. We believed in you, and then you got hurt. So they're booing her yet again. Again, like I said, it's not her fault. In fact, I'd lay blame on one person who needs to not be in the ring for a long time. And if not be in the ring, then not be on the main roster for a while. And that's Nia Jax. but with regards to Bayley,
We'll talk more about Nia when we get to the triple threat because I have a lot to say about that thing as I was there on last Monday, and I actually got to saw the footage that we saw firsthand in the ring as it was happening, and I want to kind of talk about that as well.
Well, back to Bailey.
But
it's,
you were saying
it's
about
unfortunate.
Bailey.
It sucks. Yeah, it really sucks, but it just, I really do think it's a result of the way she's been booked and the way that her promos have continuously come off, where basically they're the same exact thing. Someone in the comment section said tonight, I don't know who's writing Bailey's promos, but they need to be shot in the head. And, like, while I won't agree with someone getting shot in the head, I do feel like whoever is handling that is extremely lazy, incredibly lazy, to the point where they don't know what kind of character they're selling. They don't know what they're trying to do here. But the whole, like, I'm going to get back on my horse, just wait for me, you know, and I got through it with you. It's cute the first time. It's supportive the next time. But the third time, it's just like, all right, can we get something different here? And I think that's why everybody was upset.
Our first of three women, our first of two women's triple threat matches ends up being Sasha Banks, Alicia Fox, and Emma, which is A, nice to see hot ass evil Emma getting some time on Raw, and B, yet again more of the same old shit in the women's division with Sasha coming out on top in this particular match, tapping out Emma with the Banks statement. I'm begging for somebody other than Sasha or Bayley at this point. She
well,
was on main
I'll
event last
credit.
Week. Well, real quick, Tony. She was on main event last week, but the woman who got the loudest pop in Pittsburgh was Emma.
I think that the WWE underestimates how powerful the internet has become. Because the only reason why people are cheering for Emma right now is because she's mouthing off on Twitter, which is not a bad thing. I mean, maybe not for us. Could be for her. But, no, I mean, the only thing I give them credit for is not giving us just a straight-up Jax versus Sasha Banks. You know I have a soft spot for her, so I don't mind her getting the title shot, especially if it means a possible heel turn come SummerSlam, which I thought they may have done tonight, could have done tonight. My issue is that I just saw a match with Sasha Banks and Emma, and it was one of the sloppiest matches that I've seen in a long time with either of those two involved. And honestly, I gotta blame Emma for a lot of it. It's unfortunate because she's been wanting an opportunity for a while, so I thought she'd go in there guns blazing, but she was really off tonight. There was a lot of missteps. There was a lot of awkwardness. There was weird pinning combinations. Alicia Fox, I mean, she just looks like she's going to hurt someone no matter what. So I've given up trying to even critique her. But with Emma, it was kind of shocking. Like, I expected something pretty good, and I just got really confused with how bad
she
came off.
I don't think Emma works well in a multi-person match format. I think she's best in a straight-up singles match because the singles match she had against Mickey James on the main event taping the week prior was actually very entertaining, in my opinion.
Yeah, and every match that I've seen prior to this one with Emma in it, she's pretty stellar. She's good. She's crisp. But tonight there's just a lot of awkwardness. It's like it's almost like she took a shot before she went to the ring.
Do you want to go straight into the other triple threat here, or do you want to continue along the show timeline?
Well, the other triple threat was literally a means to an end. I mean, you knew exactly what was going to happen. There was no mystery whatsoever. And, I mean, I don't like Nia. Mickie James actually looked pretty damn good. It was a nice little reminder that she actually knows what she's doing in the ring, unless she's with Gail Kim.
Nia?
You just made the list!
Not once, but twice, dropping Bayley square on her shoulder. In about the most awkwardly way possible. And this is after almost killing Charlotte twice in a match as well. I understand that in the world of wrestling, shit happens. I get it. But you cannot be in this big of a spotlight, in this big of a stage, with this big of a company, and fucking up the most basic of maneuvers. She hurt Bayley trying to throw her out of the ring. What the fuck, Tony?
Yeah. You know, she really needs to train with big people. I don't know who she trains with. I don't know who she wrestles with. But she needs to, like, hit up Mark Henry and the Big Show and be like, how is it? How do you look intimidating without hurting anyone? Because her job is really a double-edged sword where you have to look like you're killing everyone and you have to constantly look better than everyone. But you also have to assure that you're protecting the person that you're wrestling. And she's just not. She's not protecting them. And whether she doesn't know how or she doesn't want to look weak because of her character, both of those are not good enough excuses for the injuries or possible injuries that she's causing. She literally needs someone to take her in the ring and say, like Big Show literally punches guys in the face. How does he do it convincingly? How does he do it without hurting anyone? How does he drop a fucking 500-pound elbow on someone's chest and not cave it in? I don't know who she's training with, but she needs to take the initiative to hit one of the big guys up and be like, look, man, like, I need some help.
Sasha and Nia next week in Boston. I don't think there's any question who's winning this match is there.
Well, they're in Boston. So we can either go by the tried and true WWE method of no one never winning in your hometown, or them finally signing up and saying, you know what, I think Sasha needs this win.
Well, just as importantly, too, I don't think they want to do Alexa and Nia in the pay-per-view setting. That's why they gave away the match on Raw.
Yeah. You know, it's funny. I don't know what they want from pay-per-views anymore. I don't know what they're, you know? So it's hard to gauge what they're trying to do in the ring because I don't know what they want. You know, it used to be a pay-per-view was what? Anywhere from $40 to $60 for us. So the buy rate was huge. The money going in was huge. So it was like you had to put on a show. Like, they're paying good money for it. They could literally complain about the quality of this show because they're paying $60 for it. I mean, I remember a pay-per-view being damn near $80 because it was longer and because it was in HD. Do you remember that? Like, you could get the normal version.
Wasn't one of the WrestleManias a couple of years ago, like $75.99 or something in HD?
Yeah, it was one of the Manias. So you have this mentality of, I have to put on a good show because my fans are paying so much money for this. Now, it's part of a bundle where we're paying $10 a month. And I think that what they've done is that they have eliminated the importance of pay-per-views to the point where they're not called pay-per-views anymore. They're special shows or they're special events or whatever the fuck they call it. And I think because of that, they've lost a lot of anticipation. And because of that, they've destroyed a lot of what goes on Raw. Everyone gets mad, like, why don't you wait for the pay-per-view? Why don't you...
I think we're having some phone difficulties here. I believe Tony has dropped. He'll be back in a second. We're going to take a brief musical interlude until Tony gets back. We'll be right back with more of the Raw Reaction. All right, Tony, you were stating about the status of the network, the special events there, and the fact that people were complaining about why they're giving stuff away on Raw.
Yeah, like that doesn't make sense anymore. The reason why we complain like that is because we're so used to complaining like that. But the complaint doesn't matter anymore. Raw is essentially whatever you see on the network, to the point where it's literally brand only. So you can't get mad. And I tell myself that all the time. I can't get mad that I'm getting Braun versus Roman Reigns in a Last Man Standing match, even though they're meeting in 2 weeks for a title, because that pay-per-view just isn't that important anymore. And that's not my fault. That's their fault, because it's all in how you build it. It's all in how you sell it. And when you say you get the network right now for $9.99 and then you get these two pay-per-views for free, you're basically belittling the product instead of saying, like, this is a huge event. You know, I don't need the hyperbole. I don't need Michael Cole saying it's the biggest event of the summer. I need you to book it as if it's the biggest event of the summer, as if it's important. SummerSlam is one of the big four. I think that I would argue that they're trying to make it the big two, the second one, like the second most important show of the year. Harry, can you honestly tell me that you feel like we're in a WrestleMania season-like environment?
Well, I would say SummerSlam's probably third. I would put the Rumble at second, but I don't know. I actually kind of – I've been enjoying the build to SummerSlam. Personally, I think there's going to be a lot of matches on this card that are worth spending the time, the extra 4 hours on the August 20th in order to be able to sit down and watch the entirety of the show. I think the build for SummerSlam has been significantly better than some of the builds to the B pay-per-views that we get here, and I think that is a product of the WWE Network being as cost-efficient for the casual wrestling fan as it is. In the fact that you don't have to convince people to spend their $35 a month or $40 a month. Even in some cases, I remember towards the end days of pay-per-view, it was like $45 a month for a pay-per-view, for even a standard three-hour pay-per-view, for like a B pay-per-view. It wasn't one of the big four. Like Unforgiven or like fucking No Mercy was like $40, you know? So I remember those times there when you were having to put on these phenomenal blowaway shows, no pun intended, in order to be able to make people feel like they got their money's worth now. At this point here, basically, you build up a card, you build up a decent enough card, you have the talent to pull it off that people can't really feel gypped at $10 a month, you know?
Yeah. Don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining. I love spending $10 a month on all the wrestling I can get my hands on, at least in the WWE. But what I'm saying is, if the mentality of the fan base hasn't changed, but the company has changed, then there's going to be a mismatch, and you're going to have a lot of angry fans.
I completely agree with that. And I think that stuff like what we're about to discuss right now is kind of where you kind of see that divide between the fans there. Apparently, somebody feels that Big Show is still relevant in 2017. Let me state that I don't actually hate the Big Show. But if this is anything other than an excuse to put over Big Cass huge at SummerSlam, then what the fuck is the point? Tony, agree or disagree?
Well, yeah, I agree. In fact, I thought that this was over with already. I figured Cass was going to get the upper hand and then move on. The problem is they have absolutely nothing for Cass to do. That's the problem. Second problem is there's not enough people behind Cass to care. Aside from the very clever Cass hole chant, which is only done because it's easy, there's really nothing else. People don't, you know, it's one of those things where it's like, I don't hate you, I just don't really care about you. Enzo, and look, I don't think Enzo's listening to the Raw reaction, but if he is, let me tell you something, man. Don't speak, okay? Don't count your money in front of people. Don't talk to people about your clout. Just do. Don't use your words, use your actions. Because if rumors are true, then you're out there yapping, 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 and you're getting yourself in trouble. And it's hurting the product. Because Enzo was the shit, and now he's getting ridiculed and kicked out of buses, and Booker T's making little snide remarks. You don't want that. You don't want to be that guy.
He's turned into the Miz circa 2007.
Yeah.
Not
the
Miz circa 2017. All right, so they officially make the match for SummerSlam, Cass versus Big Show with Enzo suspended above the ring. So
oh, yeah.
Not Enzo
that's...
drops down brass knuckles for Cass to use.
That's just a stupid-ass booking thing anyways. I don't know. That's dumb to me. What's the point of that? We just did that with Jericho, so it's not like it's new or innovative. And then the
yeah.
fact that, like,
not
Enzo...
Sorry to interrupt,
like
Tony.
Unless you're going to give Enzo a microphone, it's going to be completely pointless. And even if you give him a microphone, it's just going to come off annoying.
Well, sorry to interrupt here, but the point that I was about to make is not only did you do this with Jericho, you did this with Jericho 6 fucking months ago.
Yeah.
Is our attention span really that messed up that we don't remember this?
Well, apparently not, because you and I remember it.
They were hoping we don't, but we do. All right. Finn Balor and Bray Wyatt continues. I thought the segment last week was a little bit better, but at the same time, I think that keeping the interaction between these guys in the ring physically until the pay-per-view is a good idea, because this is actually one of the matches I'm looking forward to. Yeah, I have no confidence in their ability to book the Bray Wyatt character. I have no confidence in their ability to book the Demon Finn Balor character. But at the same time, these are two young, up-and-coming superstars. Balor's only mid-30s. Wyatt, I believe, is late 20s. These are two guys that could be the future of this company for many, many years to come. And it'll be interesting to see them up against each other in the first time ever in a showcase match. So I'm actually really looking forward to this match, even if the build hasn't necessarily always been the greatest for this contest.
Yeah, you know, one thing that bothered me just tonight, because it's never bothered me before, is Bray Wyatt laughing when Finn Balor outsmarted him. And the only reason why it bothers me is because you don't win, Bray Wyatt. So, like, there's nothing for you to laugh about anymore. You don't win. You're not a winner. So it can't be like, oh, you got me, buddy. You got me totally. No. It's like, ah, shit, this might be one guy that can, you know, upheave me from my craziness.
I don't know, man. I want to get behind Bray Wyatt. I want to get behind Finn Balor, but I have no confidence in the Raw creative team on how they're dealing with either of these characters.
Run.
From creative. That's what Bray should be saying there. Instead of just run, it should be run as far as you can away from creative. All right, so we already covered the next contest. That takes us into Akira Tozawa and Arya Davari. I actually kind of agree with Neville on this one in the little backstage segment that they had beforehand. Why was this match signed after Tozawa beat Davari on 205 Live for the number one contendership? It is as Neville said it is. He's facing a man who has nothing to lose in this match, means nothing to Tozawa. If Titus is the one who signed... We will take a brief break, and we will return with more conversation about the Cruiserweight division right after this.
Is this the final scene in our tragic play?
You there, Tony?
Yeah, I'm here.
All right. Your phone hates you recently, man.
You know, my phone is in the exact same position that it's been in. Like, I haven't moved. I don't know what's going on.
Tozawa and Davari, I kind of gave my thoughts on this there. I want to get your thoughts here. In my opinion, nobody came out of this looking any the better. Because Titus looks like an idiot for agreeing to the match. Tozawa looked like an idiot for agreeing to the match. Kurt Angle looked like an idiot for making the match.
Yeah, Titus sounded like an idiot on commentary as well. He just, you know, sometimes he just comes off really dumb. But yeah, this match is pointless. Literally, the only reason why they did it was to keep you, to remind you that Akira has a match coming up.
Yeah, that is the only reason this match existed, in order to let you know that, hey, Cruiserweight title's on the line at SummerSlam. Neville and Tozawa, good luck getting off the two-hour pre-show, guys. All right, and that is going to wrap it up for Raw, actually, because we've already covered the other triple threat, and we covered the main event first. Tony, you ready to get into a quick final reaction here?
Yeah.
I'm going to have this done in 45 minutes. Hell yeah.
Cool.
Favorite match or moment tonight? I think this one's pretty obvious.
Oh, yeah? Yeah, the main event.
Yeah.
The chair being
tossed. Here. Specifically, the chair being thrown.
Yes.
Those guys went out there for just a shade over 20 minutes and killed it.
Okay.
I'm sorry. Tony's Alexa Bliss dancing, or Larry's Alexa Bliss dancing gif has me all kinds of distracted. All right, I'm good.
Yeah.
Least favorite happened. Match or moment, Tony?
I gotta say the triple threat was pretty bad. The first one, I didn't enjoy it.
See, I'm actually going to go with the second one because I thought the second one was worse.
Yeah, at least the first one had time.
I find Dana attractive, but she can't work a lick.
No.
I love me some Mickey, but Mickey wasn't doing anything with the two people she was in the ring with tonight. And we talked about it a little bit earlier. I think Nia is degressing before our very eyes.
Mm-hmm.
All right, what's your overall rating for this show, Tony?
I'm gonna go with 7 because the two matches there are two matches that saved the match. I mean the show. But other than that, yeah, not so much.
Unbelievable. All right. Sorry about that, folks. That one was me, Tony. That one was my phone dropping.
Yeah, I blame Blog Talk.
I do too. It's your fault, Blog Talk Radio. All right, show rating. Did you actually give a show rating that I completely missed?
Yeah, I said like somewhere between 6 and 7.
That would be a 6.5.
Yeah, the two matches were great. Everything else was kind of there.
Yeah, I'm actually going to go a little bit lower. I'm going to give it a 6, but at the same time, I will agree with Tony that there were definitely two standout matches. And before we go ahead and give all of the credit on tonight to Roman and Braun, let's also give credit to Amber and Cesaro for a fantastic singles match as well.
Yeah.
All right, how about your MVP for tonight?
The chair.
JoJo's chair. You realize how well that chair got employed for the evening? Not only did it get thrown at Roman's head, it was also sat in by JoJo for most of the night.
I mean, if you're going to be anyone tonight, be the chair.
100%. The chair wins. In all seriousness, I'm going to go ahead and give it to both guys in the main event. So, like I said, fantastic match. Really well done. 22 minutes of them more or less beating the snot out of each other, and I appreciate that. I like the announce table tease and the fact that they didn't use it, save the announce table for SummerSlam.
Yeah.
So, yeah, let's go with Roman and Braun here, and I guess even to a lesser extent, just because we give it to him every week anyway, minorly to Samoa Joe, too.
Mm-hmm.
All right, phone issues aside, I think that's going to do it right at the 45-minute mark. So for the unfortunately called into work early Robert Taylor and the Down Since Day One co-host Tony Acero, I'm Harry Broadhurst. We'll be back next week with more of the Raw reaction, assuming Blog Talk Radio cooperates. We will have our SummerSlam predictions next Monday as well. 914-803-4532. We want your predictions next Monday night. Give us a call. We'll be taking predictions all night long in addition to covering the Go Home Raw for SummerSlam. Thanks for listening, everybody. For Tony, I'm Harry. We'll talk to you next Monday. Tony, fucking Blog Talk.
Deuces, bitches.
We out. Apologies for the technical difficulties tonight. Hopefully everything will be much better next week. Tony, Robert, I'm Harry. Thanks for listening. We'll catch you next Monday on the Raw Reaction here on Yes Wrestling Radio at www.yeswrestling.com, the home of the wrestling fans.